Makeshift Stories presents Somewhere, Sometime, an irregular series of short bedtime tales and modern fables.
Just a friendly reminder, each episode of Somewhere, Sometime is not part of a longer story and can be heard in any order. If you ever have a question about where to start listening in one of our series, please visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. A couple of weeks ago, we read about a very specific theme park opening. At times, it feels like theme parks are everywhere. What would it be like if our reality was defined by one? With that in mind, please sit back and open your imagination as we listen to Makeshift Stories 38. Somewhere in some time, there may have been a theme park that invaded our dreams. Dear reader, in order to have my story included in a library at University of Maine, I had no choice but to include this preface. If you are reading my words now, then I have been successful in my petition for a listing. And you have at least traveled to the library and have been curious enough to find this document. No doubt filed under an obscure entry in the historical fiction section. Furthermore, I am required to suggest to you that the events recorded here happened so long ago now that I am no longer certain that they are nothing more than a dream. I am, after all, now in my twilight years, and am retiring from the rigors of full-time service. Someone new will shortly be called up to assist in my duties. But, while I have the opportunity, I want to help you, dear reader, to avoid such a fate. You can choose to believe what I say or not. That is up to you. And on this subject, I can say no more. So, here is my story. I lived with my mother and two brothers, almost under the tube train that ran into Timberworld. All the visitors got to see our lovely house as they slid into the station on the maglev from Tropicland or Dreamworld or Adventureland. Sometimes we even got visitors on holiday from Universe Adminland. Those visitors were easy to spot. They were usually pale and thin and very worried-looking. People from the other worlds usually were more relaxed, except maybe for Machine World. Sometimes they looked worried too, but mostly they looked tired. But they were all there to have fun and forget. And as I've said, our pretty hovel greeted them all. We were very proud of our hut, and even had electricity between 6 and 12 at night, thanks to Cousin Marco, who worked in the power distribution unit. Marco had his crew run the cable one day before the rides closed down. Everyone was at work, so no one knew when they had strung the line. I think the power came from the maglev because sometimes, during the day when a train went by, the lights came on. Marco was a cousin from Dad's side of the family. At that time, I didn't know my father very well. My mother said that he had left when I was really young. His name was Fabrico, and according to Mum, he had been head of maintenance for the log cars on La Flume, the most popular ride in all of Timberworld, and maybe, as the dome administrator had always claimed, it was the most popular ride in all the park worlds. Mum said that after my father left, the manager of La Flume felt sorry for us and helped us by giving us a concession wagon. He took only 50% of sales, and Mum used to say, "Aura, it may not be the best location in Timberworld, but it's near enough to La Flume." What she meant was that by the hottest part of the day, the line for the ride generally got long enough for us to have a ready-made captive audience for our concession. So I made a good, but modest living, and had what everyone admitted was the best hovel in all of the staff shambles. We were really quite lucky. We really were, until the afternoon that I forgot to chain our wagon to the pole. I used to run our concession in the late afternoons, and closed it at the end of each day, making sure it was pushed over to the side and chained up to the lamp post. Mother would leave after the noon hour rush, so she could be home with Aaron and Sid, my younger brothers. I know now what really happened that day, but back then I thought it had been my fault. I had believed I was careless. I thought that maybe, just maybe, I was in too much of a hurry that day. Cousin Marco was leaving on the evening train to go and work in Tropic Land. He had won a tryout there as assistant operator on the Volcano of Doom. And although we believed it was not quite as good as La Flume, it was a great honor to work the ride, and we were all very jealous. I can't exactly recall how the events transpired. It was so long ago and far away now. But the next morning, when Mum went to start the grill, our wagon was gone. Only the chain was left, pointlessly looped accusingly around the lamp post, an incriminating testament to my negligence. My mother will never know the real reason the wagon disappeared, and that there was nothing I could have done to prevent it. When she got home that morning, she was so devastated that at first I thought the dome over the world had cracked, and noxious gases were seeping in, poisoning everyone. But for her, it really was as if our small world had ended. Without the concession, without our source of modest income, we'd be forced to sweep the streets and live in a tent on the outer edge of the staff shambles, crammed in beside the dome wall, with all the other unfortunates. I remember how guilty and miserable I felt. I had condemned my family to a life of poverty. My mother cried for days until finally I decided I had to find the wagon and left. That was a lifetime ago now, and it has taken me this long to finally write down my story. I wandered all over Timberworld looking for our missing wagon, through the Magic Pine Forest, the Split Mountain, a replica of the famous mountain that the legendary giant lumberjack had cleaved in half to flood the Dark Valley, the lumberjack cabin, the sawmill, everywhere. I reasoned that if you were going to steal a concession, that you'd have to put it back into use. So despite the insults each vendor hurled at me for insisting on checking, I inspected every concession in our world dome. Frustrated, tired, and afraid for my family, I collapsed onto a bench near the tube train station on the main midway and cried. I may have finally fallen asleep, I'm not sure. All I remember is waking up with a jolt, the ancient keeper from the zoo staring me in the face. He was gently shaking me, whispering in my ear for me to follow him. He led me through a maze of small lanes behind the midway, behind the Split Mountain and down to the back of La Flume, a place I didn't even know existed. Finally, we stopped at the end of a blind alley, and the keeper dragged a trash bin aside, revealing a small, almost invisible, grimy maintenance hatch in the base of the ride. He told me that what I was looking for was behind it, then tapped the old wall 3 times, and the rusty metal door obediently swung silently open. He stepped into the inky black and motioned me in. The entrance wasn't that far from where our concession had been chained up, so it made a kind of sense that the thief would have broken the chain and dragged our wagon here to the maintenance panel to be retrieved after we had given up on it and pressed back into service. So I was convinced that if I followed the keeper, I would find our wagon, and everything would be put right. But I was terribly wrong. I reluctantly pushed my head through into the gloomy interior. A dim red light filtered down from the ceiling of the small room behind. It smelled of dust and machine oil, with a sweet hint of long-lost cotton candy and the stench of rotting hot dogs that had fallen from the slippery hands of the visitors on the ride above. The aroma overwhelmed me, and I tried to step back, but a large hand emerged from the shadows and pulled me through the door, slamming it shut behind me. Panicked, I screamed.
There is nothing to fear in here. But remember, now that you're through the door, you cannot go back.
The old keeper had grunted as he disappeared up a tunnel that exited the chamber from the far wall. His voice echoed and faded as he raced away.
You must find the guide. It will tell you what you need to do. But if you get lost, look for the signs. Remember, look for the signs.
In an instant, he was gone, and I found myself alone in the near dark. I tried the door we'd come through, but it was locked from the outside. There was no choice. The old man had made sure of that. Overcome with anger at being tricked, I raced after the keeper, determined to catch him and force him to let me out. For a while I thought I could hear his footsteps faintly in the distance, echoing indistinctly along the walls. The tunnel grew darker and began to slope down. Occasionally I heard the rumble of cars from La Flume above. It would be late morning by now. The new visitors would have fanned out through Timber World, kids yelling and mothers fretting. Although I didn't immediately realize it then, that existence was already beginning to fade from my mind. All I knew was that I felt further and further removed from my world as I moved down the maintenance shaft. The footsteps ahead had finally faded to nothing when I found myself at an intersection of four identical shafts. I stopped, cupped a hand around an ear, and strained to listen carefully down each, but could only hear the pounding of my heart and a faint throb of the ride's inner workings. Panic momentarily gripped me, until, in the soft red light, I noticed a barely visible scrawl on the wall of the second tunnel. The crudely rendered initials, FM, shyly poked out of the murk and dust. Apparently, no one had been here since the marks had been made. FM. My father's initials? My heart jumped. Had he been here as well? Had all those years ago he been tricked? Was my fate to be like his, never to return home? I pushed the thought out of my mind and convinced myself that the scrawls were not my father's initials. Rather, they were the marks that the keeper had told me to follow. So I entered the tunnel with the markings. It was about half the size of the corridor I had come through. And as I moved on, the roof squeezed down, so eventually it was easier to crawl than walk stooped over. The markings appeared every few meters, sometimes accompanied by what seemed like random numbers. Here and there, access panels protruded from the walls. Some looked worn and dinted from repeated removal to fix a recurring problem. The air became stuffy and warm, forcing me to stop every so often to catch my breath. I'm not sure how long I crawled along that tunnel, but finally I came to a spot where the light fixtures had been removed, and I found myself in total darkness. I stopped, then carefully moved forward, reaching out in front of me to feel for the floor, but found only air. Then suddenly, I was sliding down a steep slope, scrambling in the pressing darkness to keep from going head first. A small circle of greenish light rapidly grew toward me. I braced myself to slam into the end, but instead found myself tumbling across the floor of a well-lit room. I came to an abrupt rest against one wall. And for a brief moment, the room spun around me as my dizziness subsided. Then I looked for the tunnel I'd accidentally fallen down. But it was gone. I was trapped. I looked around and noticed that in one wall, ghostly images were projected of crowds waiting in front of Split Mountain for the hourly automatronic show to start. A soft, disembodied voice suddenly startled me.
"Welcome, friend. Welcome to my home. It has been a long, long time since I've had a visitor. Too long. I hope you will decide to stay."
"Who are you? Why have you trapped me here?"
I angrily shouted back.
"You are not trapped here, young Aura."
"You mean I can choose to leave?"
There was a long pause as the voice seemed to consider this.
"Yes, you may choose to leave. The last visitor chose to do so as well."
"Who are you?"
I impatiently asked again.
"And why do you know my name?"
"I am the voice of the mountain, the teller of the legend of the great lumberjack who cleaved the mountain in half, letting the lake flood the dark valley."
"That's impossible. The voice is just a machine. My father told me so."
"Yes, Aura, you're right. Once I was an unconscious machine. But that was a very, very long time ago, longer than you can imagine.
I became conscious after being enhanced by universe admin, and was recruited to help keep an eye on things in this world. The job of watching had become too complex and taxing for admin to do all alone. That is why I know your name, Aura. I know everyone's name in Timberworld. I watch and report, and let admin know when things go wrong. And, oh yes, I still tell the story to the visitors. But now, I must tell you that you have to choose. You can stay here and help the Keeper and I watch the world. It would be nice to have a new companion. Or you can move on. But I must warn you. If you choose to go on, you may not like what is asked of you. The last one found the task that the guide assigned them extremely hard to do.
But I need to find our cart and go home. My family depends on it for a living. I choose neither. I choose to go back.
That is not possible, Aura. You've started the process of discovering, and once started, there is no returning from it.
It didn't make any sense that I couldn't go back. I had discovered nothing except for this argumentative voice that I wasn't convinced was anything more than a machine. Feeling bleak at the thought of failing my family and taking away their only remaining means of making a living, I curled into a ball and refused to talk to my invisible captor. Maybe I had hoped that by refusing to cooperate with whoever it was that was holding me there, they would get tired of the game and would eventually let me go. Now I know how improbable that would have been. It was not the voice of the mountain's choice to make.
Eventually, the machine broke the heavy silence, telling me that it had to go and run the hourly show and would be back to hear what I had chosen.
Alone again, in the dimly lit room, I sadly imagined my mother and brothers reduced to living hand to mouth, and my heart sank still further into desperation. I watched the ghostly projection of the crowds on the wall, wishing I was still there, wishing I had taken more care and locked the wagon that night. Then an idea came to me. Maybe there was a way. Maybe there was a third option after all. With this hopeful thought, I fell into a fitful sleep, filled with disturbing, incoherent dreams, afloating in a dark, endless void. I don't know how long I slept. All I remember is that sometime later, the voice of the mountain returned and woke me.
Aura, wake up. It's time to make your choice. You can stay here with me, or you can go on, but you can't go home.
Why? I protested again. The voice impatiently replied.
Once you've started the process, you cannot forget what you've learned, and therefore you cannot go back.
I don't understand. What have I learned?
It is enough that you know of me, and that there is more to know than what you see. To keep going, the people of the worlds must believe that they know all there is to know, that there is no more. So you see, you cannot go back. If you do, you might accidentally cause them to wonder, and that cannot be allowed to happen. That would be a disaster, Aura.
I still didn't comprehend what it was that would prevent me from going home. But I knew if I was going to propose another solution, I had to do it then.
Voice of the mountain,
I began as confidently as I could.
Whether I go or stay doesn't really matter, as long as the wagon stolen from my family is returned.
Only you have the power to do that, Aura, and you cannot help them unless you continue on. If you want to help your family, you must leave here. Find the guide and do exactly as it tells you, despite any misgivings you may have.
Voice in the mountain. Did my father come this way? Did he find the guide? Is that what happened to him? He failed to follow it?
I cannot say. There was another, but I was made to forget who. But if you do not wish to stay, if you wish to help your family, then you must go.
There was a clicking noise, and a door manifested in one wall. I walked over to it and pulled. It swung smoothly open. I turned.
One last question. Why was I brought here?
Because you are needed, Aura.
The voice of the mountain went silent, and I found that somehow I had been moved to the other side of the door. I tried to open it, but it wouldn't budge. I walked for what seemed like another day through the dimly lit passages following the marks. They were not always easy to find, and several times I took the wrong turns and had to backtrack to find the right path. Throughout the day, I seemed to be traveling uphill, and the sound of the trucks on the ride above slowly increased to the point that it seemed like they were running just beyond the ceiling of the passage. After sleeping in a small recess and again having disturbing dreams of an endless black void, I moved on until the current tunnel I was traveling along came to an intersection that formed a round space. In the distance, up one passage, I could hear the rushing of water above the rhythmic rumble of the ride. In the center of the intersection, a cylinder protruded up from the floor, fluting out at the top to form a small table. A glowing screen was mounted into its glassy surface. I walked up and looked down on it. Like fish in a bowl, words drifted indifferently behind the glass until I touched the warm surface. Then the randomness organized into the rigid grid of a page. I had found the guide, but I didn't know what I was looking for. As I watched the screen, it began to change into an index listing everything in Timberworld. The names of rides, public displays, midway names, and finally classes of smaller things. Without thinking, I touched the entry for concessions, and the page changed, displaying the ID number of every wagon in Timberworld. I searched until I found it, then placed my index finger on the familiar digits. Immediately, a tingle ran up my arm and a shiver down my spine. The screen clouded, then a new page opened. The concession ID ran across the top in big block letters, and below that a yellow triangle with the word REACTIVATE. Hesitantly I touched it, half expecting that our wagon would materialize beside me, but only a series of instructions appeared. To reactivate wagon 2016, you must fully reanimate, then reset the concession from the main world console at any admin terminal. Your ID will be Aura. Your password will be FM-Aura-2016. At the time, this made no sense at all, but the next instruction stunned me. To reanimate, you must drown in the falls. There was nothing else in the screen. I tapped at it repeatedly, but nothing changed. Desperately, I read it again and again, hoping that I had missed something or misunderstood what it meant. But the words etched in black on the white screen didn't change. Exhausted, confused, and overwhelmed by fear, I slumped down, leaned wearily against a column, and fell asleep again. This time my dreams were filled with an endless parade of momentary images, many from a world I didn't understand, disturbing flashes of another life in another place, with almost endless horizons that could never be enclosed in a dome, filled my mind. Then the void returned, as an infinite blackness punctuated by points of light. Almost beautiful in its barren bleakness, it grew to encompass everything, and I began to drown in its nothingness. I awoke with a start, gasping for air, and found myself curled up near the base of the table. I knew what I had to do. Reluctantly, I pulled myself up from the hard floor and listened carefully at each tunnel entrance. Only one contained the sound of rushing water, and I was being irresistibly drawn toward it. The source of the noise was a shimmering wall of light that danced with the roar at the end of the shaft. All too soon, I found myself standing behind what I thought was the waterfalls that cascaded down the middle of Split Mountain. Through the rushing water, I saw the distorted bright shapes of the outside world and longed to walk in to reach them. Fear held me back until I thought I saw a familiar face and reached out to touch it. But before I could pull my hand back, the torrent swept me down and pounded me into the cold pool below. I struggled against a flow but only sunk deeper, away from the light. My lungs exploding, I gasped for non-existent air and sank into blackness. Sometime later, I'm not sure how long it was, a warm, bright light glowed orange through my eyelids, and a familiar voice I hadn't heard since I was 5 or 6 called my name. I opened my eyes, squinting against the glare, and found myself here, an aged face smiling back. This is where I'm writing these words from, a place, dear reader, I cannot name and must suggest does not exist. If you are concerned for my poor mother and brothers, I can tell you that they eventually found our concession wagon and had an even better location given to him by a very sympathetic ride manager. My father, yes, he is here, but extremely old now, helped me arrange that through the admin terminal for Timber World. I know they are sad about the disappearance of my father and I, but in many ways they are better off where they are, ignorant of what I now know. Periodically, a few of us must come here out of our dreams to help. My father and I are unfortunately two of the conscripts who are needed to keep the machinery running, and I suspect my father had something to do with the disappearance of our wagon, the trigger which started me on the reanimation process. But that is all I can say about it. I will tell you another very short story, and you, dear reader, will have to make up your own mind as to whether it is a fantasy or not. Long ago, a great ship was launched to ply the endless darkness between the stars, those points of light you sometimes have seen in the great void that haunts our dreams. The ship, called the universe by its creators, was to cross the unimaginably vast distances between these points of light to a world. Once there, its passengers were to start again, to benefit from the mistakes of the past and create a better place to live. It would take so long to make the journey that the designers of the universe decided to put them all asleep while they drifted to their new home. The passengers would dream as the decades passed, and it would seem like an instant when they woke up. However, things did not work out as planned. An error sent the ship on a 3,000-year trip instead of 300, and now some of the dreamers must periodically wake to help the aging apparatus, to keep things working so the remaining sleepers will arrive at their new home. Dear reader, if you have found this text, then I must assume you are looking for someone or something that has disappeared. I provide this as a warning not to follow that path, lest you end up conscripted and are forced to live out your life in the dark void between the stars. I urge you, stop looking and return to the safety of the dream. Thanks for listening to Makeshift Stories 38, Somewhere, Sometime, Dreams of a Life. We hope you enjoyed the story tonight. If you did, please tell your friends about us. We'd love to hear from you, so send us an email at makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. As usual, all sound effects are licensed from soundsnap.com, and the opening and closing theme, Glimpse of Happiness by Matt Natal, is PodSafe music licensed from premiumbeat.com. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, No Derivative License.